Hi, this is Jeff Kober, and we welcome you to this Disney Insights. Well, for months now, Disney has been in a proxy fight with several outside entities in the strategic direction of how Disney would move forward. In taking the offense, this week Disney filed with the SEC a statement of how it will move forward strategically. There are four key priorities the company has during this time to strategically transform. Our focus is experiences growth, particularly in the theme parks. We will explore what that means and how that is defined by CEO Bob Iger in this announcement. What is the company's strategy for theme parks? How does it blend in with everything else Disney is trying to do? We'll also look at other recent announcements and how they are shoring up with the strategy moving forward. Based on these insights, we'll project forward as to how Disney will begin to spend $60 billion in theme parks worldwide in the next years to come. Also, what could 1,000 undeveloped acres or 7 new lands do for Disney? We'll also talk about that and other key points Disney is making at this time in addressing their challenges with Peltz, Perlmutter, and Rasulo, as well as Blackwell's own proposed strategy. Join us as we look at Disney's $60 billion theme park strategy for increasing shareholder value. Now, as always, I highly recommend that you check in with Disney Insights. I do so because there are going to be a number of graphics that I'm going to refer to, and a number of links and other images and so forth that really are going to support the kinds of things that we're going to be talking about here. So you're going to want to check that out. Make sure while you're there to, subscribe so you can be notified of upcoming podcasts and posts as they come out. We always seem to pretty much have a post for every podcast that we do. Also would recommend that you go to your own. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Listen Notes, and so forth. Go over there and make sure you're subscribed to this podcast. Hey, and if you have a chance, share it with others so that they may be notified of the things we're talking about. We've really talked about some very different things over the last month as we have canvassed all of Disney. Last week, we were talking about Walt Disney in Kansas City, and the week before, we were talking about whether Epcot is really the best it's ever been in its 40-plus year history, and then a previous visit to Disneyland, as well as a discussion about Epic Universe coming from Universal. We just cover so many different things about Disney. Make sure you share this with others so that they are advice of what's going on. And by the way, if you could ever get a chance to give us a positive rating or positive review, that really helps others be notified of our podcasts as they come out. When they, you know, type in Disney or theme parks or Disney World or whatever, hopefully with more ratings and reviews, Disney Insights will come up for those individuals as well. So thank you for doing that in advance. Now, let's talk about this. This is really, there's so much that Disney has put forward. I'm not going to canvass all of it, but I do want to help you understand the root of where all this is coming from, and particularly how Disney theme parks are impacted by all of this going on. First off, know that there are two groups that Disney is frankly trying to address right now. The first is Nelson Peltz, who is an individual who has gone from company to company to try to stir them up into creating greater value and so forth in their organizations. In truth, that has had very mixed results, at best temporary and not long term. Remember that Disney's strategy is best when it plays a long term strategy for shareholder value and benefit. The second person that's involved here is Perlmutter, who is associated with Isaac Perlmutter, and he is associated with Marvel. He was really at the helm, more or less, when Disney bought Marvel from from investors, particularly Perlmutter. And in fact, Perlmutter was the CEO initially, but as Kevin Feige got more involved and as Disney kind of saw its own future with the Marvel experience, Perlmutter kind of went to the side, and this has become a fight, personal battle between he and Bob Iger. He's frustrated that he hasn't. Remember when Steve Jobs sold Pixar to Disney, he became a member of the board. Perlmutter never did. And in time, he's lost his. In fact, over the COVID period, he was simply dismissed from any involvement with Marvel so that Marvel could go on without the influence of him. The third individual is Jay Rasulo. Jay was formerly with Disney. At one point, he was a CFO of the organization, and then he took over Parks while Tom Staggs took, or well, actually, he was over Parks, and then he switched with Tom Staggs to become CFO. All this happened, and the long and short of it is that became a little competition to see who would become the CEO of the company, and Tom Staggs kind of won, and Rasulo went away, not to really do much of anything. Anything he's been involved with hasn't been necessarily successful, but he suddenly has re-emerged. I don't know intimately any of these three gentlemen, but I have had direct one-on-one association with Jay Rasulo. And as opportunity comes later on the podcast, I'll talk about my perception of him and why you should be, if you are a shareholder of Disney, you really ought to be. Well, in fact, this whole podcast is really to support the idea that honestly, Disney has the best agenda moving forward. So anyway, that's one group that's dealing with Disney right now. Another will is Blackwell's, and they are trying to support a different agenda with Disney. We'll talk about that a little later, but essentially at the heart of it, one of the big pieces is they think that Disney needs to, that there's too much on Bob Iger's plate. Disney needs to be broken up and sold off, and that becomes a short-term shareholder value gain. Disney is very much against that, although they have said that they are open to, you know, certain pieces of it. They've certainly been moving with some new moves with ESPN in that direction in terms of sharing some of the investment on ESPN and the future of that and so forth. That's another conversation. Again, there's so much to cover. But we're going to talk about how these two entities have really focused Disney on a couple of key priorities. The first is around studio creativity. They're looking at telling better stories. This is the foundation. This is the heart of Disney. Story, story, story. And it really is what builds out the rest of the organization. So they're very focused on best-in-class storytelling and then from that, streaming profitability, being able to take this crazy thing of Disney Plus and ESPN and Hulu, and trying to make that profitable, trying to make that a successful experience. With that comes the fact that ESPN is going through a lot of change of its own, and so they're very focused on that priority. I'm not really talking about any of those three key priorities today. What I do want to talk about, however, is the fourth priority, which is experiences growth. And what that amounts to is strategically investing to turbocharge growth, particularly in the parks and resorts. For instance, recent openings of World of Frozen in Hong Kong and Zootopia Shanghai are generating excitement and higher guest satisfaction. And they want to build on that. Together with Epic Games, they plan on creating an all-new gaming and entertainment universe to further expand the reach of beloved Disney stories and experiences and so forth. So there's a huge opportunity in this particular element. And that's what Disney's focused on doing moving forward. Now, to do that, again, going back to, and by the way, there are images that kind of help illustrate all this. So again, come back to Disney Insights. There is a ABC approach to making all of this succeed. The first comes with unmatched content creation and storytelling capabilities that come from tentpole types of, well, the Walt Disney Studios, Pixar Studios, Marvel Studios, Lucasfilm, 20th Century Fox, Searchlight, ABC, all of these kinds of franchises tentpoles can create franchises and great content. That's A. From that, it drives into what is their platform for distributing this, and particularly that's relating to Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN Plus, but also ABC, Disney Channel, things like Freeform, National Geographic, getting that piece to work and funneling those great IPs through that content distribution. And then finally, to see, to extend the relevancy and lifetime value of content by taking these franchises to consumers through products and experiences throughout the world, which of course means all the resorts, Walt Disney World, Disneyland Resort, but Shanghai and the internationals, Hong Kong, Paris, Tokyo, and then also the Disney Cruise Line, and even Disney Consumer Products and the Disney Store, Disney Gaming. All that is part of taking this and creating, I love the phrase, lifetime value of the content. How do you make this thing live beyond the time frame it's in a movie theater or on Disney Plus for you to see? That brings us to the next diagram that they have showcased, and we showcase it in Disney Insights. Their thesis is enduring franchises highlight their powerful intellectual properties and their unique ways of monetizing their capabilities. So, for instance, let's take Frozen. In 2013, Frozen opened in theaters, was a big smash hit. From there, for the first time in forever at Walt Disney World, in fact, the whole Frozen summer came to Disney's Hollywood Studios in May of 2016. The Frozen Live at the Hyperion Theater at Disneyland Resort and Disney California Adventure came. Then in June of 2016, Frozen Ever After came to Walt Disney World. So these things went into the parks. And then following that, in 2019, Frozen 2 came out. That was followed by Once Upon a Snowman in 2020 and Olaf Presents in 2021. And then in recent months, November of 2023, World of Frozen at Hong Kong Disneyland and soon to be a Frozen Kingdom at Tokyo Disneyland Resort. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. And eventually, also a date to be determined, World of Frozen at Disneyland Paris, and then beyond that, Frozen 3 and Frozen 4. Now, what does this represent? What this represents is all of these investments, whether it's in film or in shorts or in attractions or whatever it has been, has resulted in a return of investment of 9.9. In other words, for every dollar you invested, or every dollar invested in developing Frozen, whether it's an attraction or a movie, there has been $9.90 return on that investment. That's huge. That is a great investment, and it keeps on delivering. And that's why you see other Frozen films coming out. That's why you see Frozen attractions coming to Tokyo still and Disneyland Paris, because they see that is a strong franchise. Now, you'd think this is kind of silly, but if you look, what was it? Kung Fu Panda, their fourth film has come out in the same amount of time, and it took in $53 million over the last weekends, $54 million, somewhere in that neighborhood. And you're thinking, this is Kung Fu Panda. There's nothing like Frozen. And yet it has returned a terrific value back to the organization. Well, in Disney's presentation, they're saying, hey, look at our IPs. You look at Frozen, it's a 9.9 return on investment. Toy Story, beginning back in 95 with Toy Story, the original film, but going on to attractions and other films, it's made a 5.5 return on investment. Avengers, it's made a 3.3 investment. Anytime you double your investment, you're doing great. But these are beyond that. Star Wars has made a 2.9 return on investment over the years. Mind you, some of these are very expensive films to create and so forth, but still they have, by and large, done very well in the box office. And that's why these same IPs, Toy Story, Avengers, Star Wars, that's why they're showing up in the theme parks, is because Disney sees the ability of continuing on the love of these franchises far beyond a film that has been created for it. Now, to do this, to make all this happen to occur, whether it's creating great films or getting the whole Disney Plus thing going right, or figure out the ESPN problems, or especially in our conversation, the theme parks, again, Blackwell's kind of said, hey, you got too much on your plate, Bob Iger. You can't do this. And that was a problem with Chapek, because too much of Chapek was driving this and not his team. So one of the messages that Bob Iger has thrown out in all this is, hey, we're going to restore authority to our creative leaders, and Disney is going to improve its efficiency and effectiveness in creating great, whether it's content or distribution or park attractions. And they name, for instance, Alan Bergman and Dana Walden as co-chairmen of Disney Entertainment, dealing with, again, Disney, Marvel, Freeform, Hulu, Disney Junior, ABC, all of those things. Then you have Jimmy Pitaro dealing with all the ESPN elements. And then you have Josh D'Amaro being the chairman of Disney Experiences. And the idea here is that Bob is putting expectation on Josh D'Amaro to justify and build out these experiences to their success. And they believe that doing this is going to deliver a successful park experience that will return value to shareholders over time. And so they're wanting to really create for that kind of investment moving forward. So let's look specifically at how Disney is investing strategically in their most profitable segment. And that's important. The thing that makes the most money is not the movie. It's not what's showing up on Disney Plus. It is experiences. That's what's creating the most profitability. So in September of 2023, they announced a $60 billion investment plan over 10 years, including capital to expand domestic, international parks, and cruise line capacity. In other words, let's add more lands or more new attractions to, or even new parks or new boats to what we do, or let's take areas where we are not getting the kind of capacity we want and let's overhaul them so we maximize capacity on those things. So for instance, we're going to talk about Dino Land and the idea of putting Encanto and Indiana Jones there, with the idea that that's going to, I went to Dino Land just last Saturday, and it's not doing the kind of numbers it ought to do, especially when you compare the same ride system, meaning the same number of people per hour on that ride, when you're at Disneyland, and how many people are in line to do that at Disneyland. So anyway, so they announced that in September 2023, and then they said, okay, our investments will build upon a strong track record of generating outsized returns, and will focus on, first, accelerating storytelling by utilizing our wealth of intellectual property, untapped stories, and unmatched creativity. Again, look, And by the way, you see this image of Disney Pixar Cars as in Cars Land, Toy Story as in Toy Story Land, Star Wars as in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, Disney Frozen as in the Frozen lands that are going in, Disney Mickey Mouse as in Mickey Mouse Runaway Railway, Guardians of the Galaxy, which is shown up, Avengers as in Avenger Campus, Avatar as in the world of Pandora, and even Tron. They literally physically show these things. And they show that when we use these kinds of investments, we get a better return on what we're doing. So we need to build off of these really good intellectual properties. Even Chapek, a long time ago, when he was in charge, was asked the question, why do you continually use just IPs instead of new kinds of themes? And he said, look, if Universal had our IPs, they would be maxing them out. And sure enough, they are. They just announced a play area based on Kung Fu Panda. And they have other meet and greets elsewhere in some of their Universal parks. You think they wouldn't do the same on Frozen? Do you think they wouldn't maximize adventures? Absolutely. And so Disney needs to be doing the same thing. That's the first thing, accelerating storytelling. Second, expanding our footprint. We have, and this was mentioned this week, over 1,000 acres of available development across our 6 existing resorts in North America, Europe, and Asia. Now, this is a little bit confusing because last week in an interview, Bob Chapek talked about our ability to build 7 new lands. For those of you who are Disney fans, a land is not a park. A park consists usually of several lands, such as Fantasyland, Adventureland, Tomorrowland, etc. And so what I can tell you is, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, you could build easily 7 more parks, not lands, parks, in these 6 existing resorts. And we'll talk about what that looks like a little bit later on. Third, investing in innovative technology to improve the guest experience. Yes, of course, that means mobile ordering. Yes, that means improvements in the dining reservation system, which we should talk about because there have been some great improvements and more to come happening there. Those are important. But also, what happened to AI? What has happened to how is gaming being brought into all this? We're going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to conjecture on some ideas that Tom Bricker has brought forward in his blogs. But there's opportunities to use technology in some really innovative ways. And then finally, reaching out to new fans around the world. For every park guest today, we believe there are more than 10 consumers with Disney affinity who don't get the privilege or opportunity to visit the parks in a given year. Now, why aren't they visiting? They're too far away. Or is it because they can't afford it? Or because health or whatever it may be? Or maybe it just... So how do we create more opportunities? Because there are... For every park guest, there's more than 10 guests that could be in the parks. So there's huge opportunity to build out, and that's why it's really important to emphasize that word capacity. It is not just enough. Of course, then we get into, well, the best way to build capacity is build more theme parks, right? And you're not building a new theme park at Walt Disney World when Universal is doing Epic Universe. Absolutely, that's a problem. But there are many things that could happen. We'll talk a little bit about that. But Disney makes a very clear case that when they invest in these strong storytelling brands, and if they increase their footprint, they believe they are going to increase attendance, increase revenues, and ultimately increase value to the shareholder. So there's huge possibilities on their way. And so we know is coming interview with this $60 billion that is being talked about, which is twice what was spent in the previous 10 years. It was about $30 billion that was spent, which included, by the way, a whole new theme park world. Shanghai Disney was part of the last 10 years. So, and so many additions since. Well, you know, when you think about Star Wars Galaxy Edge being part of that, and you think about Pandora coming to Disney's Animal Kingdom, and there's a lot that's happened with $30 billion. What could be done with $60 billion? Well, let's talk a little bit about that. And there's, again, going back to Disney's 10-year investment plan, that plan supports investments to create magical new experiences and to refresh the existing infrastructure. So it isn't all new stuff. It's kind of fixing up what's there, like the Country Bear Musical Jamboree. But 70% of the plan is earmarked. According to this, it is earmarked for capacity expanding investments. So when you look at Disney Frozen going on at Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Disneyland Paris, when you look at Zootopia at Shanghai, when you look at Fantasy Springs with all it's bringing on, when you look at Tiana's Bayou Adventure coming on board, and then the Disney Cruise Line, well, you've got a lot going on, and you've got a lot of innovation. They list some of the innovations that they've got going on. Let's just take another look. It's been several months, but let's take a look what already we kind of know, or at least is highly rumored, on the horizon. First, at Walt Disney World, we've got, obviously, Tiana's Bayou Adventure. I hope to have more comments about the construction of that in the next week or so. The Country Bear Musical Jamboree, that's gone down. It should come back up later this year. There was talk about Pirates of the Caribbean Lounge coming. There was Smellifants on Parade. Who cares? But that is one of those things. And then there is, of course, the Beyond Big Thunder Mountain. Is that Coco? Is that Villain's Lair? What could be beyond that? Which could be done pragmatically if you reduce the size of the Rivers of America in the same way that you reduce the size of the Rivers of America, which was already smaller than Magic Kingdom's over at Disneyland when they built Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. So those are big things. Hopefully this year we'll see more concrete plans on some of these bigger things, but those are big things. At Epcot, we just got Journey of Water, inspired by Moana. We got the Communicore Park area. Now we're getting Communicore coming on board sometime soon. There's a revised test track, which should be coming on sometime this year, according to them. I wouldn't be surprised if that bleeds into 25, but you know, they have said it would be something coming on. Now, one of the things that Tom Bricker talked about in the Disney Tourist blog, I thought was pretty brilliant, I think it was he who shared it, was the idea of taking the Wonders of Life building, which was going to be a Disney play building, and then with COVID, everybody thought hands-on children's things were not going to necessarily be the right fit for that space, even though they had well gotten underway with it. So they put a pause on it. But there is this investment that Disney has made in Epic Games, and they're showing something of a Fortnite-related Disney universe. I have the graphic on Disney Insights for you to see, but it makes you kind of wonder, what could this look like in a space like Wonders of Life? Wonders of Life is a marvelous opportunity to increase capacity at Epcot and to continue adding new things that really speak to guests coming and visiting the park. So again, that's a rumor, but it's not a bad one. And we'll have to see where that goes. At Disney's Hollywood Studios, Ahsoka, Andor, and Mandalorian are coming to Star Tours on April 5th, I believe, just in a couple of weeks. And then The Little Mermaid Show, a musical adventure, is coming in place of the previous Little Mermaid Show. So that's not much. I'd like to see more going on here, but just to say, there are things going on. Disney's Animal Kingdom, there's a Zootopia replacement for Tough to be a Bug. And then, of course, there's this big Dino Land issue. What of Encanto and what of Indiana Jones could be coming in that space which has been occupied by Dino Land? That could be a huge opportunity ahead of them. Next, and then finally, you have the Walt Disney World Resort. So you have the Polynesian Resort DVC Villas coming on board this year and the Fort Wilderness Campground DVC. Now, I don't know how much of the $60 billion was allocated toward some of these projects that are coming in this year. Maybe they were part of the $30 billion in the previous 10 years. I just know more is coming. And I think, and by the way, this is the leanest list of all the parks, of all the resorts. And that's because I think with the whole Reedy Creek mess craziness that there is so much more to come and will be in time. But I think this one's having to hold back further than others. Meanwhile, you have the Disney Cruise Line. Talk about massive investment. We have the Disney Treasure coming on board in December of this year. At some point, we'll be bringing on board the Disney Adventure that will be docked in Singapore. There was, remember, a third Disney ship that was also supposed to be built after the Wish and Treasure. That's yet to be named, but it should be forthcoming, say, in 26 or something like that. And then we have Lighthouse Point, which is opening up this fall, the new island resort experience that Disney Cruise Line passengers will be able to enjoy while in the Caribbean. So, or in Bahamas in this case. And so all of that is coming on board for the Disney Cruise Line. Big investments there. Over at Shanghai Disneyland, they just opened Zootopia, which is impressive. And you get hints that Zootopia is going to go elsewhere. Yes, there's a Zootopia attraction coming to Animal Kingdom and the former Tree of Life experience, the Tough to be a Bug experience, but I still, in my mind, could see Zootopia showing up at Disney's Hollywood Studios and being a second, again, Frozen shows up in studios in a show and over at Epcot in a ride. Beauty and the Beast shows up as a show at the studios and over at Magic Kingdom as a restaurant and attraction. This could happen with Zootopia. It could be in multiple places, I believe. They've also announced Shanghai Disney's third resort hotel, badly needed, in my opinion. Project Triangle is what I think Imagineers call it. It's a little more intimate a resort. It's 400 rooms. It's going to be in an Art Nouveau kind of style, but that's coming. And then I think going back to Tom Bricker, I think he was the one who suggested, no. I can't remember who actually mentioned this one, but there is a rumored coaster or some kind of attraction coming adjacent to Zootopia, not part of Zootopia, but in a space that's kind of between Zootopia and what is Treasure Cove. Now, if you go to that space, you actually see a very small little cart, and it's called Scuttles something, Scuttles stuff or whatever, but it's a sort of Little Mermaid cart. Could I imagine something Little Mermaid themed right here? Absolutely. I could see that kind of possibility happening. At Tokyo Disney Resort, you talk about massive things happening. We've mentioned it before, but the Fantasy Springs addition to Tokyo Disney Sea with Peter Pan, Tangled and Frozen, talk about a big three hitter, and a resort hotel that is part of that experience. That is huge. And if that were not enough, they have started work on a brand new style of Space Mountain over at Tokyo Disneyland that's going to not only, I think, take Space Mountain to a new height, it's going to transform their Tomorrowland over there. Hong Kong Disneyland is really, World of Frozen was the end of a very long list that included the new castle revision, that included Marvel editions, that included there could still be another Marvel edition. I'll talk about that at Disneyland in a moment, but a Marvel edition there, Marvel Editions there, a Moana show that came in. So they've had a number of things happen. And so we'll see what comes next. I would say Marvel is what's coming next to Hong Kong Disneyland. But let's go over to Disneyland Paris. They just finished the remake of the Disneyland Hotel, which sits at the entrance to the park. They are doing some transformation work to the Disney Village, which brings more of a mid-century aesthetic, kind of like what they're doing over at Downtown Disney at Disneyland, which I didn't even put down on my list for Disneyland. And at Walt Disney Studios Park, they are serious about taking this park to a whole new level. Alice in Wonderland, it begins with the craziest thing. They've always had a Lights, Motors, Action. They had the first Lights, Motors, Action show, which was a very cool show. That was always part of the original attraction. In fact, it was the original attraction of that Studios Park when it was built, and it was in French and English, and it was far better than the Lights, Motors, Action version we had here, in my opinion. It allowed live guests to be part of the action and so forth. It was really very cool. It sat dormant. I'm surprised they, because it's attached to Marvel, I'm surprised they didn't turn that into some kind of Marvel stunt show thing. That just seems like a huge possibility, but they didn't. Instead, what they have done is created what's called an Alice in Wonderland BMX. It's like a bike show with stunt bike skaters, that type of thing, all in the theme of Alice in Wonderland. It is bizarre but colorful, I gotta say, and I'm curious and curiouser as to what they just might be doing there. Meanwhile, Studio One in the Plaza, after you exit Studio One, is in some kind of redo form. There is a, beyond that is a new lake, a restaurant that will be attached to it, and next to it a sort of a spinner ride, but based on Tangled and the boats in Tangled and the lantern scene, and kind of a more, not so much about spinning, but more of a romantic, you know, kind of experience on this Tangled round ride. They are building a massive Frozen Land similar to what you see at Hong Kong Disneyland. And then there's Space Beyond Frozen, originally a Star Wars Galaxy's Edge type edition. I think they've shelved that. I think they're looking at what might be next for them, but still a lot going on at Disneyland Paris. Now we get to Disneyland. And beyond Tiana's Bayou Adventure and the Star Wars edition we mentioned earlier, there are two things coming. The Avengers Multiverse Battle Adventure, which actually is not just for Disney California Adventure. It's for Hong Kong Disneyland and theoretically for Disneyland Paris at some point as well. So all Avenger campus style experiences are supposed to have this big Rise of the Resistance style multiverse battle adventure. I have projected that I think they are looking at the technology for the Peter Pan ride. It's not going to be like the traditional Peter Pan ride. They already have that at Tokyo Disneyland. But at Tokyo DisneySea with the Fantasy Springs ride, there are actually two rides for Peter Pan. One is related to Tinkerbell, but the other is related to kind of taking a flying ship. And I think that ride vehicle looks a lot like the ride vehicle I've seen for this Avengers attraction. And I think that's kind of the basis for that attraction going forward. So more to come there. Bob Iger has said that Avatar would come. At one point he said it's a land, at one point he's kind of said it's an experience. It sounds to me like, and one point he said Disney California Adventure. In my view, they need to put it in Tomorrowland as a place. I could see the kind of ride experience you have with Pandora Flight of Passage being done by a virtual link off of Tomorrowland, like you were doing it from a Tomorrowland on Earth. At any rate, I could see that, but they haven't gone that direction. But there's something coming up to Avatar Experience. But what's the biggest thing? And it is a big thing that has happened this week, is that the Disneyland plan, Disney officials have cleared a major, major hurdle this Monday for theme park expansion, what's been called the Disneyland Forward Project, that was approved Monday night with a 5-1 vote by the Anaheim Planning Commission. This has been going on for about 3 years. The project next has to go to the city council. But they think that it's moving forward in a positive way, and that's going to mean for Disneyland a new third park. Where it goes, obviously what you see in the drawings is something that stretches along the Disney hotels, the Disneyland Hotel and the new Pixar hotel. I don't think that's where it's going to land. I think it's going to the Toy Story lot, but I could be wrong. But there's a whole lot more to come in all of this, and it's a pretty exciting kind of thing that's happened with Disneyland. This is going to be the biggest change to Disneyland since Disney California Adventure opened, along with the Disney Grand California and the new parking lot. Going back to what Bob Iger said, 7 new lands is possible, but frankly, is 7 new theme parks possible? Well, with 1,000 acres, yeah. If you think about Disneyland Park itself being 85 acres and Magic Kingdom being 107 acres, you can definitely not only get 7 additional theme parks out of your 6 resorts across the world, but on existing lands that you have access and ownership of. So this is very doable. And in Shanghai, there is a pad and a plan, as I have heard from an Imagineer, for expansion of an entirely additional theme park in Shanghai. That might be 10 years before it gets built, but that is doable. At Hong Kong Disneyland, there was a pad that got kind of taken up during COVID for temporary housing and so forth, but I think that could be brought back. Disneyland Paris, I think there's space. Tokyo Disney will make space if they want to make space. Disneyland, of course, we talked about the space there. And yes, Walt Disney World, there are not only pads that are available in the 100 or 100 plus size range, 100 acre plus size range. Frankly, Disney could take something like, and I'm just projecting, they could take one of their water parks and make it into a theme park. They could take Coronado Springs and make it into a theme park and have enough space there, or Caribbean Beach. There's lots of ways Walt Disney World could build additional theme parks. Will they? That remains to be seen. But the point they're making is there's a lot of acreage. There's a lot of capital we've set aside for investment, and we hoped to do a lot of things moving forward. Now, I'll just mention a couple of other key points, because the report that they filed with the SEC was so huge. But let me mention a couple other things that I think are relevant. First of all, a statement was made about these other investment agencies. You cannot restore the magic if you don't understand the magic. And I truly believe that these people who are coming from the outside do not understand the magic. They do understand how to create short-term value, but that does not create, that never created the Disney we know today, and it cannot create the Disney we will know 100 years from today. It has always been a strategic long-term view. And when they say understanding the magic, my limited but personal experience with Jay Rasulo, who is supposedly the management answer to all things Disney, mirrors that Disney perspective that he lacks the creative soul of Disney, even though at one point he headed up the parks. I knew him when we were dealing with the Chicago Disney Quest. And the problem was is that when Disney Quest opened up in the summer, of that summer, it had huge crowds. But by the time the summer ended and the school year began, you could shoot a cannon through Disney Quest and not hit anybody. My opinion was we needed to come up with creative solutions for addressing, because you could still fix it on the weekends, but how do we fix it during the weekdays? I had already been doing professional team building with convention groups and so forth, conference groups at Disney Quest in Orlando. It was our suggestion that they do so in Chicago. There's a lot of convention crowd planning. And so I went out there. I spent time with Grassullo and others. We had dinner together. I could tell you he just doesn't get the magic. And moreover, I wasn't supported in getting the people we needed to test the idea of doing this with business groups. So the whole thing failed, and ultimately, Disney left Chicago and left the hole in Philadelphia, where it already had begun construction on Disney Quest. And my take on that is that they had already decided that they were going to close these things, kind of like the Star Wars hotel was recently closed. At any rate, long and short is these people don't get magic. So if you're a shareholder, don't vote for them. Use your vote wisely. Blackwell is not in cahoots with Rasulo or the others. However, they are trying to advance their own agenda with getting their own people on the board. And they believe, one of the things they believe is that Disney needs to be broken up into individual components and sold off. That's a short-term solution, obviously. I love this slide, and I'll show it on Disney. On DisneyInsights.com, it is an original organizational map. It wasn't really an organizational map. It was really the original, what they referred to as Walt Disney's synergy map. The word synergy wasn't used back then. But it showed how theatrical films, you know, moved into TV, and how it moved into merchandise licensing, and how it moved into Disneyland, into publications, and they got this idea of the synergy of all these pieces, that 1 + 1 could equal 3 when you put them all together. To that effect, Disney has also created a new synergy manager back, I think, last October to kind of help do that. But that is the value of Disney, is by creating the synergy. Now, mind you, sometimes it drags on Disney. Heaven knows Disney Plus sucked out funding to the parks, and when the parks were the ones bringing the funding, or when the parks really needed funding because they had to close because of COVID, and so forth. But long and short is, Disney has a strategy for the next 10 years. It hasn't all been laid out perfectly, but in my belief, it's based on some really core, smart, intelligent ideas by which the organization could successfully create attractions and parks that you and I will love for years, maybe generations to come. And so I'm very positive and upbeat about Disney's strategy and where Bob Iger is trying to go with this. Now, as enthusiastic as I am about the next 100 years, let me just tell you, I'm also enthusiastic about the last 100 years. That's why, when you get a chance, please visit my site, go on the link, because A Century of Powerful Disney Insights, Volume 1, is available on Amazon, and please check that book out. It is a great read. It shows you how we got to today. Well, in part because it's the first 50 years, and Volume 2 is coming out a little later, but there's so many key events that have really created the foundation for who we are, for who Disney is today, and why it is so loved by people around the world. So do check out Century of Powerful Disney Insights. Also know that this podcast is brought to you by Performance Journeys. Myself, it's my organization where I go in and provide keynotes, consulting, support in helping organizations become more engaged, in helping leaders become their very best, in helping customer service experiences be delivered. Check us out at performancejourneys.com as well. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this Disney Insights podcast. A lot to cover, been meaning to cover many of these things, and this was the perfect time to do so. We'll probably be back out in the parks next week, but who knows, more announcements may be coming between now and then, so please stay tuned to Disney Insights, and in all that you do, know follow the compass of your heart. Have a great day. We'll see you real soon.